October 26th, November 14th abstracts.
I'll make the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Public comment. Paul Nelson, 7 Canal Street. Michael Crane, Maple Avenue.
That's me.
Yep. You're up.
I'm here to talk about a proposal that Alistair Morales brought down to the town hall a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if you read it, it's about 5G and greenhouse gases. Have you read it? I assume you guys read it.
We probably did, but we don't really have any control over that.
Okay, well, I've got some documents I'd like to give you folks. Made a copy for everybody. One is this is the data that he based his proposal on about the cell phone signal reception data. And then, make sure I, yeah. And then these are as an information source for you folks. This is a link to a video on YouTube that was a recording of a meeting in Poughkeepsie this summer about wireless. A good information source, good useful information. So I want you folks to be able to have that. And I'm just gonna, I assume you're gonna read this document, and I just want to hit a few of the high spots. How to begin. That Poughkeepsie meeting, the expert that's talking to the people on the town board in Poughkeepsie points out that the 1996 Telecommunications Act doesn't allow towns or locales to stop the erection of a cell phone tower. That's outside of the power of a town, but the operation of that tower is within the purview of the town. So that does give the town more power than at least I thought that we had. One problem with I'll read this summary here. He says that to minimize the power consumption of wire telecommunication facilities in the village, that's where it hooks into greenhouse gases, because fiber optic. When you've got a tower like this, it's two things. It's wireless telecommunication, which is cell phone. But then it's also internet, and it's a very inefficient and a big power user in terms of internet. Fiber optics cable is much better, and it uses a lot less electricity. So one of the things that this proposal asks or is talking about is getting fiber optic in the village. Rather than depending on the tower for internet, there are a number of laws involved, but there's a law that goes back to 1934. It's Title 47 U.S. Code that regulates it. In 34, it was regulating radio, but that's still in place in terms of the Telecommunications Act as well, and it states that only the minimum amount of power can be used to spread the signal as far as it needs to be spread. And this data that I've given you, Alistair went around to 30 some odd places at the perimeter of the village, and they all have good cell phone reception. So we don't need more power. So that's one of our concerns, because there's been talk about putting more small cell towers down on Main Street. We already have all the signal strength we need. So, but then, I mean, there are many aspects to this, unfortunately. I'll touch on a couple of them. One is that fiber optics broadband is a much better and much faster internet than wireless is. And business won't move to a place like Philmont unless it's got fiber optic, because wireless won't handle the amount of information that needs to go back and forth on a business. So in that Poughkeepsie meeting, the expert talking to them lists a number of towns and cities over the country that installed fiber optic. And then business came in, GDP of the town came up some. It's a very good thing for a town. And wireless is completely inadequate for that. So where else can I go with this? But a big part of the problem here is that says this here, a 5G base station is generally expected to consume roughly three times as much power as a 4G base station. I mean, that tower is using a lot of electricity. So if we're concerned about energy use and about greenhouse gas, the state of New York, about 40% of the electric power in the state is generated by burning natural gas. So, you know, we are talking about greenhouse gases here.
You're talking about the tower up on the hill?
Talking about the tower up on the hill.
And that's not ours. That's not in the village.
That's not owned by the village, no.
No, it's not
Clover.
In the village.
It's in the town of Clover.
It's in the town of Clover.
It's in the town of Clover.
That's and not, we have,
there's
we
another
have.
Tower behind it. Is that not in the village?
No. Mm-hmm. There's none of those are in the village. None of those are ours.
And also, I was going to say, you might appreciate knowing that I believe it was in the summer, we had a presentation, we've been exploring fiber optics, and we had a presentation here, we've contacted the cable companies, and it's coming. It's coming.
It is coming.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good thing. I'm glad to
hear. Well, yeah. Some of it's already here. I mean, there are places
on Main Street, right?
Is already here.
Yeah.
But in order to get fiber optic throughout the whole village, you're going to have to wait until it's going to be more or less mandatory in the next few years. Everybody's going to have to go to it. They've already geared it up. They've already geared their equipment up to take on fiber optic. It's just they've got to get here.
What's the financial hit on the town? Because I don't understand that at all.
The financial hit on our village is if we wait them out is nothing.
Because they'll be forced to.
They'll be forced to, because all their equipment's going to be obsolete.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's what I had to say.
You might want to go to the Clover meeting and talk to their. We have a climate task force here, but there's also one in Clover.
Uh-huh.
And we agree with you on, I think, on a lot of what you said.
So yeah,
talk with them and we'll go from there. Like Deb said, we're already working on the fiber optic.
Yeah, as far as any hearsay or talk about putting cell towers in the village, that's the first
thing
anybody on this board
has heard about.
Yeah, so. I've heard it as a rumor.
No, it's not.
Exactly, it's a rumor, but there's no truth to it or substance.
I'm usually the last to know about anything anyway, but no, I haven't heard anything.
Okay. All right.
What are we calling cell towers? What is a cell tower?
Those small cell towers.
So you're talking about the small 5G, not like on the
other. There's no discussion at all for any type of tower in the village.
No.
Except for other group was mentioning that.
Wait a minute. We have to do this in order. We're not going to get into it. This gentleman asked to speak. And the next person to speak now is Peter Johnson.
I was raising my hand.
Yeah, I know, but you, I have to go in order. There's people, there's people signed up to do this. People do this the right way, actually. They call in and they sign up to talk. So these are the people that we're gonna recognize first. And if there's time left over, I will take hands.
Okay, thanks.
Peter?
I'd like to support that push for fiber optic. It's critical if the town is gonna advance. So what I wanna bring up once again is local law 2020, local law number one of 2020. So I have the question. 26 months have passed since the adoption of this ordinance concerning rental registration and inspection. And about that time, perhaps another few more months added to that, at least five structures had burned down, making homeless several dozen people. Now, of the 26 months, six of those months are grace period noted in the ordinance. The building inspector about 5-6 weeks ago estimated that around 100 properties are not registered. This equates to around $25,000 in fine income due but uncollected because of inaction. Furthermore, the $3,100 collected that he's reported for registration and inspections is woefully short of covering the costs of the program, which includes $5,000 for the software that has yet to produce a single report seen by the trustees, and the employee's time. So why should the taxpayer continue to subsidize private sector landlords? State law requires that fees cover actual costs incurred. Philmont is woefully short in fulfilling this requirement. Now, as various examples from the Hudson Valley Pattern for Progress Main Street program illustrated, the substantial decay that many Hudson Valley small town Main Street areas experience is due in part to the inaction or outright failure to enforce existing laws and local ordinances. Reversing the decay's relentless progress to the bottom requires political will and consistency in the application of existing legal measures. Without this consistency, many of the efforts envisioned or currently occurring to raise Philmont up will be as successful as tossing a cup of coffee in the ocean to raise the tide. I hope we don't become an extension of Mellonville's Automobile Museum, for example. So in sum, when will the fines be levied? We've got 100 properties that aren't registered. That's two, according to ordinance, $250 fine and or 15 days in jail. Given the costs to run the prison in Columbia County, I would recommend just paying for the $250. So if there's no intention to fine the levies, perhaps a legal counsel could advise what we should do with this local law because it's not being enforced. Thank you.
Well, as you know, Peter, our building inspector is only here 6 hours a week, so 100 out of 400, you know, he's doing what he can and keeping up with everybody else.
Right, but the inspection is triggered only when registration occurs. According to the ordinance, all rental properties have to be registered. So if the inspection may take place in a, well, in my estimation, it'll, all the properties at this rate will be, have one inspection early in the 2030s.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
But we're not, we've tried to hire another building inspector. We're not gonna go to Albany to get a task force in here. That's just not gonna happen. There's no building inspectors out there that are gonna come. So we have to rely on our man.
The building inspector in Kinderhook resigned recently and they immediately hired another one. The Quabbin Township building inspector left, what, about 6 months ago, and they hired another inspector. So they are around. Maybe it's where you're advertising is a problem, or maybe the salary is a problem, but.
It could be the salary is a problem.
But is that not registering is in violation of the ordinance? I'm suggesting you're leaving $25,000 on the table that's due and it's not coming in.
Well, best thing I can do is give him a call Thursday when he's in, or tomorrow when he's in, and see what, where we're at.
I mean, maybe legal counsel has an opinion what happens when you don't enforce an ordinance. We know from other towns in the Hudson Valley, decay continues and it's a race to the bottom with decay. And all you have to do is look at some of the buildings right here on Main Street, like 150 or so. The burned out homeless people, the burned out buildings.
I know the burned out, both the burned out buildings on Main Street have permits out on them, so there's not much he can do about that. Mr. Gellert was sent a 10-day letter after the fire saying that he had to take it down in 10 days or fix it. And he chose to fix it. Of course, we all know how fast Gellert works. But being that there's a permit, I can't tell Lee to take it down.
Right.
Just, I've tried. We've tried, he's tried. We just keep calling these people, the other one on Main Street and the one on Eagle Street. They get phone calls periodically from me or Lee to get them down. The one up on Eagle Street, there's an insurance issue. Why after 3 years we're still dealing with insurance, I don't know. But I have given Lee the okay to go in and take them down, but he can't. Rob?
What about the property that we know are rentals and they're not registered? How about putting the fine into action?
I'll have to call Lee.
Okay.
Do they need an inspection note to be fined?
No, I mean, if Lee finds that they're renting and he can prove it beyond a reasonable doubt, because okay, it needs to be a court action in the justice court here. And then we notice them, bring them in, give them an appearance ticket, and have a trial if they want it. Then after, if the judge finds that the proof is sufficient to say that they're illegally renting it in not following the local law, then the judge could issue a $250 fine.
So the onus is on us to prove that it is a rental property.
Right.
How do we do that?
You'd have to get admissions. You remember back in the day when the prior version of this law, we would cite the landlord and the tenant. They'd both get ticketed and they'd come in. And usually in the plea negotiations with the tenant, we would say, we'll make your ticket go away if you testify to the court when you moved in, how long you lived there, and those circumstances, because then you've got a warm body that's testifying to that evidence. Short of having a tenant willing to testify, and we, you know how that works. Sometimes
yeah,
they have problems and they're mad at the landlord and they're willing to do it anyway.
Or
then
they get kicked out for testifying.
Right. Lee's got to get proof, physical admissible proof, that it's being rented to so-and-so. Utility bill, you know, as we've said before, one of the best indications we have that a property is a rental or a rental has changed is they come in and buy garbage stickers or they ask for the water bill and the clerk or deputy clerk forward that on to code enforcement.
What about if they have more than one or two water meters? I mean, that would be...
Yeah, I mean, that's not a single family occupancy anymore. It's
right.
A two family, and you know, no one's gonna, I mean, you can own a two family and live in both sides, I guess, but that's pretty good evidence. Yeah. you run into, they come in and, oh, it's my sister, she's only there for a month, or it's my cousin, and you know, you got to overcome that because it's a trial.
So that could be a good place to start and look at multiple water meters, and if they haven't registered yet, then we can start knocking those off instead of just walking around the village and seeing if there's six cars in a parking lot.
Right.
Or five or six electric meters.
Yeah.
And I've volunteered to kind of work on this, so I can get, you know, that might make a difference.
Kate.
I'm here tonight saying I'm in support of Alistair's resolution also. I think it's really, really important for you guys to take a look at if you get a chance, and there's some really, really fine ideas in there. He presented that to you guys in October, and I believe that this was really well-searched and a sensible plan that will reduce energy consumption and then meet the New York State goals for greenhouse gas emissions reductions. So I do thank our village's climate task force and for their work, and I appreciate that they care about Philmont's future. But however, I don't support the New York State Climate Action Council's scoping plan for how New York State will reduce the emissions, the greenhouse gas. So I think Alistair's plan is great, and I think that this is something we really all need to think about. Some of us went around and we collected signatures from people in our neighborhoods, and I have to tell you, people are really interested in this and concerned, and they like to know what's happening. They're concerned about some of the ideas that the New York State has about how to reduce, getting rid of fossil fuels and completely going over to electric. That just doesn't seem feasible or even like a good plan. I feel like Alistair's plan really supports conserving energy by using our wireless in a little bit different way. I'm also concerned, I heard about the Wi-Fi on Main Street, and I don't know if there was supposed to be extra infrastructure to support that, but I don't think that's a great idea either, because if you don't want to be exposed to Wi-Fi, you have no choice. And also, I think we have coverage to support people using their cell phones without extra Wi-Fi. I don't have a smartphone or an iPhone or whatever, but I have a little flip top that's 25 years old that I use occasionally. So I don't really know how much is coming off, but I do know there's a lot of power going through the village. And as Mike was talking about the tower at Pine Haven, I realize Clobbers owns that. But I do believe that their power is sourced from Mellonville and comes right up our main street. I could be wrong about that, but I don't know how else they would get it up there. So don't we as a village have a right to what's being transmitted on our public wires?
I don't think we do as a village. I think that's all regulated by a higher authority. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, you're right.
Well, the problem is not just, this is getting off subject because I came just in support of Alistair's proposal, but the tower is really, really close to us, and that in July, just four more rungs of antennas came in, so there's 25% more power. And in looking at how that was passed through the town, there were a lot of things. There was no visual impact or no negative visual impact, and no, there were a lot of things that were done kind of in a strange way, and it's been really hard to get the complete information about who's receiving the rents up there. So that tower leaves a lot to be discussed within this village because it affects us. We're taking all the effects of that to provide for everybody else. So I think we need to look at that a bit, and maybe we can figure out a way to discuss, or we can go to Clobbrick about that. But what Mike said about the law, about the telecom industry is only supposed to provide that law for minimum power, the US Code 324. And it is against the law. It's illegal to put in more power than's needed to for people to have cell service. So we should be careful about that, I think. There's really a lot at stake here. It's critical. All of this that we're talking about, the greenhouse gas emissions and the way we're using wireless, there's so much more power used by putting large bundles of data through the air instead of wiring them up. So it's good to know that fiber optic is coming, but we need it sooner rather than later, because if the New York State wants us to reduce emissions, we need to think of other ways to do that. In addition to Alistair's, I don't think the New York State plan can work in every community. It's very top down, and I think it's really expensive. You know, it would take us 200 years to pay for some of the, like they want to make the envelope of the house so tight, and all these old homes, it's nearly impossible to do that. And it would cost a huge amount of money, and I have people in the construction business who say people are making the houses so tight now, they need filtration systems separate to bring in air. So it's kind of, I think there's a lot we have to talk about. And I was thinking maybe could there be a committee or a working group in addition to our climate smart task force to help come up with solutions that everybody's comfortable with. I don't know if that, and I also would like the Climate Smart Task Force to meet in person. I don't do Zoom, I can do it by phone, but I think it would get more people involved, because from the amount of people, we only had a little bit of time, and that document is 9 pages or something like that, and we were also showing another document what the Climate Smart Task Force proposed and did not pass with you guys. So we wanted them to look at both and see what's being offered, what the state would like us to do, and what can we do to meet them, but maybe alter some of the plan. So also, this is, we do have a list of the people who signed, and on here is names and address, and then whether they're for Alistair's proposal or not, and about the LED lights, if they're okay with them. We have a lot of people in our neighborhood who have way too much light coming in their bedrooms, and they didn't know what to do about it or who to talk to, so we should talk about that. And in Lenox, they're having a little bit of a problem. They don't have as much coverage as we do, and people are wanting to put in towers, the industry. So we also have, this is a flyer, have connection with protection in Lenox. And this is an educational forum on Thursday night, and the top people in the field are there, and there's questions and answers. Like one of these guys is an attorney. I mean, there's lots of things that, as a village, we should look at, and maybe this could be helpful. So I made copies for you guys if you want some. Do you have the other thing? Yeah. Right. Yes, we have. We also have other people who got signatures, and they didn't get to us. Did you make a copy?
No.
Oh, I wonder if anybody can do that. Is it possible that anybody could copy this one front page for
maybe
us so we have a copy?
We're in a meeting right now. We're not going to get up and copy it.
I
put the link
that
to that Zoom meeting on that document.
I don't know. So that's signatures. We have another page that didn't come here. And the thing is we really took the time to make sure everybody read everything, so that they really know what's happening here and what's at stake and what's going on. So I don't know if you guys could want to inform yourselves. This is a great news.
Kate, if somebody has a camera on their phone, they could take a photograph of those.
Of what?
Of the signature page, and then you would have it.
Okay, I wouldn't, but maybe Tomoko could get that, I don't have a phone to do that.
Does anyone have a phone to take a picture? Kathy, I can bring it tomorrow.
What, you want your original back then? Should we take them all back and?
Hand them in.
Would that work better?
I've got one of these for, that's all.
Yeah, I've got a couple, yes, and anybody else, it's just. Okay, thank you, and I just have to say, the industry has gotten really far surpassed safety and guidelines, and there has been a lawsuit to make them, update. They're using 1990s, safety guidelines, not even standards, so we have to really be careful and wonder for the next, for our kids and the next generation, and electric pollution is real, so. Anybody else want a copy of it, please? Thank you.
All right, we're gonna go to the bid opening for the truck. We only get one?
Yeah.
So this bid came from Denoyer Chevrolet. Where's the price?
What are these bids for again?
This is for a pickup truck.
Okay.
Why can't I find a price? $75,976 bid. We only have one bid. This includes utility bed spray. Can I have some quiet, please, because we're trying to have a meeting here? It includes a utility bed spray and bed liner and the Fisher plow on the front of it.
Are we allowed to only have one?
You went out to bid, you only have one back, so.
Yeah, and.
Is this the one that we were talking about?
Yes. The funds are there to pay for it, so. I'd like to entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to accept this bid.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Good enough. All right. Do I have to sign this someplace?
I haven't seen it, you saw more, I.
Okay. Reports of committees, Rob?
Nothing new to report, just ongoing projects.
Jessica?
Water and sewer bills will know that October 1st, we'll be by the 31st without penalty. Certified letters to delinquent water sewer users will be mailed tomorrow. Work closely with Seth for the meter list, work closely with Mike to accept submission and reimbursement. Working on delinquent tax calculations, calculating union attorney, pile data and figures for union negotiation meeting. Research library archives for data rollways pertaining to blueprints, floor plans, and site building plans pertaining to upcoming feasibility study. Office will be closing November 24th and 25th in observance of Thanksgiving, and there'll be no workshop on the 23rd. Ad tracks will be put together on the 21st. You know, three people could, trustees could stop it and sign for me.
When do you need to sign that?
I'm just gonna, since we won't have a workshop next.
Oh, okay.
I'm gonna make it like on Monday, so we can stop it before Thanksgiving.
Building inspector report, you wanna read that?
Building department monthly report received October 20th, 2022. Tennessee sealed issue with 4, Tennessee inspections 9, rental registration issued 5, vacant building registered 0, building permits issued 8, construction inspection 7, CO/CC, I don't know what that means, issued 6. Anybody know what that means?
Sorry, what was it, Larry?
CO/CC.
Certificate of occupancy.
Okay. CO searches were 5, NOV issued 8, Sheffield properties are not registered or inspected. All were issued 9/27/22. The property manager has spoken to me and picked up applications. Complaints received and investigated 0. Zoning review and referral of new projects, no new projects. Submitted Village of Philmont Code Enforcement Officer Lee Hine.
Thank you. Community Center. Do that next.
Sure.
Get library. You want me to do library too?
Yeah, sure. You can do both.
Yeah, I can do both. Okay, first we'll do the library report for November, submitted by Toby. She's thanking Nabal at the DPW for thanking for replacing the American flag. Services, virtual programs with the County Library Association are planned for monthly history talks with Linda Wald. History webinar, Martin Van Buren's Politics of Slavery, November 14th, 7 p.m. It'll be on Zoom. Habitat for Humanity webinars have been postponed to reconvene in January. Storytime begins this Thursday at 11 with a sensory free playtime at 10:45. Keeping it flexible, we'll have a holiday wrapping station again at the Cultural Center starting up on Thanksgiving weekend through the week before Christmas. The annual children's ornament workshop is scheduled for Saturday, December 10th. Under grants, she has $4,100 from the Hoover Foundation. It's a music grant. And a generous library supporter donated $10,000 towards the feasibility study. They wish to remain anonymous. Statistics, October in-person virtual program attendance 285. October people in the library 680. October digital services 632. Toby will be attending a free conference in Baltimore, Maryland on November 1st and 2nd. For library directors, while there, Thea and Toby will be stopping at the Library of Congress in DC. She applied to and was accepted to the surplus book program that allows libraries to take free books to add to their collection. She started a list of items to look out for. She wants people to tell her if they have topics or items that should be searched for. Group exploring a community big read for the county in late winter. It's not really a sentence, but that's what it says. We are investigating a possible grant from New York Heritage to support the program. The book mentioned as an option is The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind by Brian Mueller and William Yam Kwamba. It's available in multiple formats and at the library. Mid-Hudson Library, she attended the Central Library Committee meeting, a Directors Association meeting, and the annual Mid-Hudson Library System meeting. Library. Community Center report for what happened in October 22, submitted by Julie Veronese, Director. The center's been regularly checked during the month. A rental took place on October 15th for a family party. The user was contacted about a key return and the condition of the center after they vacated. The conservation group, through George Brem, will be using the center on Tuesdays at 5:30. Scouts are using the center on the second and fourth Wednesdays at 6. Santa Claus Club uses the center for meetings on the first and third Thursdays at 6. Greener Pathways plans to start using the center again on Thursday afternoon. Programming, she's looking for pop-up programs applicable to all ages for on Saturdays. Programs can be standalones. Hands-on programs attract the most interest. Anyone interested in leading an activity, you can contact Mrs. Veronese about that. She does have
money for materials and stipends as well, if anybody wants to run a little program. Okay, that's those, Brian.
Thanks. Can somebody get Vern?
You're up.
Good evening. For the month of October, we had 19 calls for service, had 2 arrests, 77 property checks, issued 10 UTTs, 17 VAT warnings, and no parking tickets. As we enter November, if we can maybe post the parking law, sidewalks and all that stuff, just as a reminder as we go into winter, because we're supposed to get a little snow.
Do we need to get a flyer made up for Prospect Street?
Yep.
Yeah, maybe probably should.
So you guys can put them on the windshields?
You can put them on the windshields, it's just, I don't know, it's a reminder, just the alternate parking type thing and all that stuff, so.
Can you handle that? Just make them up a flyer and then put it in their box and they'll put them on the.
Is that a seasonal law or is that a year-round law?
That's a seasonal for, it's for winter. It's during the winter hours, during the winter parking law that Prospect can alternate.
So it's not in effect in June and July, just.
No.
Jessica, if you send me that flyer, I'll upload the information to the website too.
Anything else we have to do?
I thought the purpose of that law was to.
That flyer's not for, we don't need that on, that's gotta go only to Prospect.
Prospect Street.
Yeah.
So there isn't like a winter, what were you saying before that?
Parking in general.
I'm gonna challenge that decision because I thought we made that law to make it on parking on one side so we can get a fire vehicle apparatus down that road all year long, not just the winter time. I think I'm right, but you know what, if I'm wrong, I wouldn't do it the first time.
You could be, I mean, it makes sense what you're saying, but you know, our problem has always just been the winter time, and that was one of the things that we did that.
And it was for plowing too.
Right, plowing purposes.
I recall that too.
But I know that was part of the discussion, if we didn't.
I don't think we changed.
I don't think we made the law.
Maybe we should think about it.
Yeah, I mean, you got a little bit of time, but not much time.
Is there any?
We can discuss that in the next workshop.
Yep.
Is there any language I should put up on the website about winter parking?
It's actually already all drawn up, so you probably have it, Jess, or Chrissy could probably get it for you. It actually just has the local law for the parking, and you can actually just upload that exact exact thing. Everyone should be, you know, familiar with it, and, you know, nothing new. It's usually posted on the door, or, you know, in the front in the village office, so when people coming in and out, they can see it, just so it's not anything new. You know, we usually give the first go around warnings before we start writing the tickets.
How's Halloween go?
Halloween went well. We, you know, a couple of things that we did, you know, non-related, but overall, everything was
pretty quiet.
Perfect. And then Deb, that individual has been placed with DSS and all is good.
Really?
We were inquiring. So
good. With his dog?
Yeah, everything's set.
Thank you.
Are you gonna work on the sidewalk shoveling violations this coming season?
No, it's nothing to do with them.
Yeah, that's
sidewalks, that's gonna be only.
Yeah, we issued all the tickets last year, and that was there were just the villages assessing fines or whatever.
Us, that's us. If they don't shovel their sidewalk within 24
hours after.
We're gonna
we do it.
We do it,
and then we bill.
Yep.
Okay.
And how much is it?
Huh?
How much is it?
$2 a foot. $2
a lineal foot.
Lineal foot. Okay, I'll add that to the website too as a reminder to folks.
I'm getting old.
Right on.
Thank you, Vern.
Yep.
You're welcome.
Ms. Baker's not here. Larry's going to take over for her tonight.
Big shoes. Summit Lake and Watercourse, the BOA and LWRP report summary, the monthly BOA co-chair standing meeting with Mayor Johnson and Trustee Ostrander and Barbara Segal, Chair of the Watershed Advisory Committee, was held on 10/25. Meeting was held as a special meeting, including the deputy mayor. Nomination of Village of Philma Historic District Updates. Daniel McEnany, Director of Division of Historic Parks, Recreation, Historic Preservation, had requested to attend the meeting regarding the nomination process of the Village of Philma Historic District. Mr. McEnany opened the call by informing the attendees that his office had received several lengthy emails from the chair of the Philma Climate Smart Task Force. The majority of the 45-minute call-in was spent clarifying several misconceptions regarding the nomination process of the Historic District. Points of discussion included the following information. One vote per property owner is allowed to nominate the Historic District, regardless of how many properties are owned by a property owner in the district. State and federal income tax credits will be available to property owners if the nomination receives majority support by property owners with properties in the district to be listed on the New York State and National Registers of Historic Places. The difference between a local preservation commission, which Philmont does not have, in contrast to a listing on the New York State and National Registers of Historic Places, which would only require property owners seeking preservation tax credits to assist with no renovations to apply to state historic preservation. Current provisions in the Philmont locally adopted New York Stretch Code allow a property owner in the existing Village of Philmont Historic District to apply for energy code considerations when renovating an eligible district historic property. The code provisions require the property owner to submit documentation from the SHPO or a licensed designated professional demonstrating that compliance would therein degrade or destroy the historic form, fabric, or function of the building. BOA grant updates. PBI reported the draft of the RFP for the BOA work plan is in motion. Estimated time of arrival is 11/29. LWRP grant watershed management plan updates. The Watershed Advisory Committee, the WAC, consisting of municipal participating towns of Clawbrook, Ghent, Hillsdale, and also its meeting was held on 10/12, reported the RFP for the watershed management plan was published on time to the state contract report website, Village of Philmont website, PB Inc. website, and participating town / websites. Contractor proposals are due November 1st. Three WAC meetings set up in Zoom for the proposal selection review process for November 9th, 16th, and the 23rd. Selection scoring chart to be emailed to WAC on November 1st with received proposals. Project working groups to advance the SLW BOA plan and objectives. Subarea 1, Summit Lake Waterfront Playground Park Community. Goals are to improve the park and playground to better serve the community and redesign the community center. Subarea 2, Canal Street Mill and parking lots. Goals include redevelopment of the parking lots, preservation of the mill pond and watercourse artifacts, new proposed building for this area to support local trades, a heritage trail, preservation and restoration of historic buildings. Subarea 3, working group to be established aimed at to revitalize the revitalization of Summit Mill and the neighborhood surrounding. Subarea 4, Summit Lake Restoration. Goals include interfacing with the LWRP Watershed Management Plan. Interface and advisory working group and plans for a connector trail to the proposed Harlem Valley Rail Trail. Subarea 5, working group to be established aimed at downtown selected BOA sites located on Main Street. Watershed Advisory Committee, the WAC Chair Barbara Segal, includes partnering towns Clawbrook, Hillsdale, Ghent, Ocelot to participate in the Aquamic Creek Watershed Management Plan. Heritage Group advanced the recommendation for the nomination of the Village of Philmont Historic District. And finally, the Village of Philmont BOA and co-chair meetings. A standing monthly meeting is held each month following the Village Board meeting and before the Village Workshop. BOA and LWRP topics that require full board input will be brought to the workshop meetings. PBI attends a co-chair meeting, which includes discretionary work groups representation when appropriate to support continuity and information for the co-chairs to provide oversight of the BOA project.
Thanks. DBW and the water, as you know, probably all know, they've been having trouble with our leafer. Hillsdale has had theirs up here, which has broken down three times also. They finally called in town of Ghent with their big loader and a 10-wheeler to get the leaves off the streets. Hillsdale's leafer's back up and running. I guess they're gonna be in one day this week, hopefully before we get bad weather. See if we can't get them cleaned up. Can I get you to stop up there, up to the DBW?
What?
I'll make an appointment with you and Cliff to look at that, to look at our leafer. Because it doesn't sound to me, it sounds like something stupid to me, but.
I've already been up there about it.
Oh, you can't figure it out either?
I haven't gotten that deep into it.
Alright.
I was just listening to what they said.
Alright.
Is that something Skip or Robbie can look at?
They were telling me a new engine would need to be installed. And I said, get a boat engine, because they're four-cylinder, and make a adapter, and we can hot rod it.
Okay. You know more about that stuff than I do, so I have to defer to you on that.
I can go up there.
Alright.
With Cliff?
Yeah.
We can help.
They're gonna work on the trucks, get them ready for the snow and the ice. Salt and sand's already been mixed. We should have plenty of that. And down to the water treatment plant, our new disinfection station has been shut down for the year. It's all been cleaned up. We'll start that again in May. I think we have to start it back up May 1st. It only runs for 6 months a year.
Can I ask a quick question about the salt?
Yeah.
It seems like it was pure salt last year.
No, it's mixed.
Our cars are rusting so bad. It's like, it used to seem like it was more sand than salt.
It's mixed.
Can we put more sand in again?
I don't. Those guys take care of the roads, and they, that's their job. The DPW's job. They take care of the roads. They've done a wonderful job as far as I'm concerned.
I know, but could you just ask them about that?
Yeah.
The ratio would be a good idea maybe?
If it's changed, yeah.
Thank you.
The frames on the cars are not as good as they used to be.
I know, there's not good paint.
You gotta be friendly with Hoffman to get the.
Nothing is.
No, it's really sad.
It is.
$30,000 Silverados that are 5 years old are rusting out.
It just seems like it was really salty last year.
Mr. Pano?
I will be part on the Climate Smart Community Task Force. Last meeting was November 9th. We had four members as well as the Capital District Regional Planning Commission representative was present for that meeting. We discussed further distribution of the LED light bulbs. We had a reverse Halloween event, which went quite well, but we still have about half of the total bulbs still to distribute. To make that more successful, there was discussion about doing, for instance, at the library and at McNann's and the food co-op to have an actual display set up so that makes it easier to do that exchange. We also considered, I think Doug Cropper had asked about this a while ago, changing out bulbs at the municipal buildings. Maybe we'll do that, but we should do that after the audit. So that's a possibility. And we also, if someone has come forward to do a video, because I think some people are confused about changing out the bulb, or how does it work? And to just make it more appealing to produce this video to go on social media. And it turns out we can spend some money on that as marketing through the original clean energy grant. That was the money that paid for the bulbs. There's still money left over for that, so that's how that would get paid for.
Okay.
And Sarah King said she would take the lead on those issues about distributing the bulbs. The NYSERDA Clean Energy Community, for that's the project to do the energy audit. The kickoff with that will be with Melanie McMahon of NYSERDA, and I believe she sent an email to Jessica and to myself. That she will get in contact with either you or I, Jessica. I'm not sure who will get that first. To use LNS Energy Services, they're headquartered in Clifton Park. In the meantime, I'm expecting that to happen in the next couple of weeks. But in the meantime, the first task is to get the 2 years of energy bills for those three buildings. So that is something Jessica could start. That should be all doable online. NYSEG makes 2 years of the previous bills available right online. And you just have to plug in the meter number, and that's how you get that. Then the and then of course that program was through the commitment letter from the village. So that's what set that off. And that is a $10,000 grant these services get paid for out of that grant. Then the by resolution, the village agreed to doing the greenhouse gas emission inventory. That's just for the municipal buildings, and also a climate action plan. So that has been approved as well. Fortunately, there's some overlap from the energy data from the buildings in the previous one to this action. So we don't have to redo the data, but that for the buildings, but you do have to do it for the street lights, for pumps, the mobile fleet. We do have to get the information on the fuel being used for all those items, and it gets separated out. Then for the action plan itself, there's a syllabus that's available, and then the Philmont board will have to decide which things in the action plan make sense. Again, this is just the plan, it's not actually doing it, but it's to get this particular credit for this action, it's to create this plan. And that'll start with the Cornell extension in early 2023. And I will take the lead on that one. The other resolution that was signed was to do the climate vulnerability assessment and climate adaptation plan. That's the county-wide, but because the county decided to do this, free of charge, you can do it at the local village level, and it looks like that will be granted. Again, that would start in early 2023, and that's an important action to take, considering that the comprehensive plan is being reviewed, so that you can absorb the adaptation plan into the comprehensive plan review. And Allison Hoppe and Susan Mitchie will take the lead on that particular action. So completion of those actions, which should occur certainly in 6 to 12 months, hopefully some of them in just 6 months, will put the village well within the bronze certification status. So that is something we should think about applying for, because that gets us a much larger grant. It also gets us on the map of one of the municipalities that has achieved the bronze status. Those submission deadlines are January, April, and July of each year. The application is quite arduous because it's a collection of all the data associated with each action that was taken. So probably we would be looking at the earliest to apply for that in July of 2023, and or possibly year from now, January 2024. So that will require the commitment of several of the task force members. We're trying to get a tour going of the Valencia microhydro facility. Andrew Personette is the committee member taking care of that. But in the meantime, later at the end of this week, there'll be a tour through the local champions program of the Wappingers Falls microhydro facility, which I'll be attending, and Deborah might be.
Yeah, I need the time and information, but
okay.
Let's communicate. All right.
The Wappingers Falls facility is done by a very active group, and they provide all sorts of education about it, how to go about it. So that could be a very exciting action to start in the village. So that's why these tours are so important. We've heard the report from the historic, the nomination of the Historic Preservation District. I had a meeting with the Director of Historic Preservation, Ben McEnany, along with Vanessa Bertozzi, who's of the Hudson Valley Climate Action Network. And this was specifically to discuss the issue of meeting the energy code and being in a historic district. And we just need a clarification here. I was also in discussion with several people who are working on the code committee for New York State. So if your historic district, you are exempted from meeting the New York State Energy Code. However, those municipalities that have adopted the New York State Stretch Energy Code, that exemption is removed. And that's a very important, that's a significant item to understand. That exemption does not hold for municipalities that have adopted the stretch code, and Philmont has done that. So bringing up this conflict with this historic director, he said basically it's a negotiating process. And so it would be the consultant, and I also met with Spring Sutter and her architect Lee Armstrong, who's working on this issue right now with the Hopkins House or the Hilltop Hotel project. And they were extremely frustrated trying to meet both things. And I'll just bring out one example. To get the tax credit for that historic designated building. Oh, and let me just back up a second. They're going through this because when you're in the eligible status, that's pre-nomination, but you're in the eligible status, you can apply for a tax credit in that status. So that's another significant thing to understand. So that means anyone in the village who wants to go for the tax credit, who is in a contributing building, in the eligible status, can apply for those credits. So that's what is going on at the Hilltop Hotel. But they're exasperated because the historic district is telling them they cannot use new windows that replicate the historic windows. They must use those exact windows that are there now. That means having them dip to get the lead off of them, asbestos caulking, that all has to get removed, and then when that's all done, then the windows come back, and obviously you're not going to need an energy code with those types of windows, so the suggestion is to put in a storm window, but you can't put it on the outside, you have to put it on the inside. So these are some of the exasperating elements of trying to meet both codes in New York City. Example of NYU that's converting old hotel buildings into dormitories. They have gone through the negotiating process and they've been allowed to do new windows that replicate the historic features. So this is the sort of thing that people will have to face in Philmont because we have adopted the stretch code. So just something to think about in entering that process. We have, Arthur and Sarah King have offered to do a logo for the Climate Smart Group, and we hope to have that, use that wherever we can, and we would start by using it on a sign that identifies the electric vehicle charging station that's behind the library, but we have to work out how to get the sign on the state road since 217 to the state road. Susan Mitchie is working on that.
Tom, Sarah King got in touch with me and asked about putting a display for the LEDs in the village office, right at that table where we have pamphlets and stuff and masks. Is that something we could do? Just put a little display and have this be another place, the office be another place where people could swap out their bulbs?
Do we have room for a display?
I'll check. I'll talk with you, and we'll see. And if not, we won't do it. And if we think there's room,
okay. Any bulbs left over from the ones I got?
Yep.
Quick questions.
I was just wondering if we can unadopt the Scripps Code.
Why would we do that?
Sounds like they're saying things that are free can be very expensive.
When we did adopt that stretch code, I spent quite a few hours going through that. I didn't realize that it was going to be I'm just trying to phrase it as far as the historic buildings. You know, the only reason that in a historic building you have to do what they say is if you want the tax credits. If you can do whatever you want to your house and just not get the tax credits.
Right.
So when you build a new house, the stretch code is great. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's nothing wrong with a stretch code. It's nothing that we aren't doing right now.
Right.
There's very few new houses out there that won't pass the stretch code. Mm-hmm. So by us adopting it, it means a lot because it got our Climate Smart Task Force up and running, which is a good thing.
And you can still get the tax credits on things which are not energy related. For example,
right.
If you needed a roof, if you needed your house painted, if you had a rotten porch stoop, all that stuff you can still get the tax credits for. So the stretch code part only affects things which are energy related. So you still get tax credits.
Didn't the gentleman we spoke to on the phone say it could also be dealt with on an individual basis, case by case? If we decided to allow that to happen, then they could not meet the stretch code insulation.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that was his conversation. But it would have to come from this board, approval case by case.
Mm-hmm.
I and my wife had joined the task force.
I just need to answer that topic.
Why are you interrupting?
No, because I want to go back to that topic. You'll be able to see.
Just a minute. Go ahead.
We don't do this.
Finish.
We joined the task force, and we now have been kicked off of it. I spoke to Ken Dow, the lawyer at Columbia County. And he said that it's illegal to stop observers from observing anything that's having to do with the public.
Let me let Rob answer that right now.
Yeah, I mean, I did that research. I'm also the county attorney for Columbia County, and I'm familiar with their Environmental Management Council and their Climate Smart Community.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to open government because the EMC, Environmental Management Council, is governed by the open meetings law, meaning they have to have minutes notice their meetings and do it just like this board does. I called New York Open Government to confirm at the request of our planning director and spoke to council there, lead council there, and they said the Climate Smart Committee is not subject to the rules of open government. So that they can operate as a committee in a room wherever they would like to operate, because they're only advisory to the policymakers who are not making policy. And that's the New York State Committee on Open Government. You can Google them and call them and see what response you get from them, but.
All right. There's no more public comments. Rob answered his question. Tom, you have something else to say on the Climate Smart Committee, nothing else?
Climate Smart Committee, yeah, based on, so you're saying that you.
We had that 45-minute open conversation with Mr. McEnany, and that's what I took from it, but if, you know.
Right, so you can negotiate the historic part of the historic side, since that's a choice. You can't negotiate energy side, because the energy side is code.
Okay. I wish we had recorded it, because I heard what I spoke, so if we need to follow up with him, then that's fine too.
And he may not have known we adopted the stretch code.
True.
But I don't think that was ever brought up in that conversation.
Okay.
And I'm relaying this information from the people I'm speaking to.
Right. No, I'm not disputing.
Okay.
I'm only repeating what I thought I heard.
Okay.
So.
All